We'll start with Sandy, then Tom, then Clancy.
Gotta get a watch.
Here, you got one?
Yes. Well, I like to know when to stop. Okay. Hi, everybody. My name's Sandy Beach, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's an honor to be. Is that feedback? There we go. Nope. I'm going to wait a second. Okay, how's that? It's a real honor for me to be with Tom and Clancy, because when I was new, the number of years that separate us was huge. And the longer you're being around, the more they kind of accept you in their company. And then more recently, Clancy actually said something nice about me, and I've just... I wish I had recorded it. I'd play it at my home group all the time. It's just wonderful to be able to come up here and share. If you would ask me what's on my mind as I look back on the years I've been in here and the magnificence of Alcoholics Anonymous, I would say it's vigilance. We all know that in our personal program, it really involves staying vigilant so that we never get off track in our own personal spiritual lives. As the big book says, we're not cured of alcoholism. We have a daily reprieve contingent on our spiritual condition. And that spiritual condition gets weakened by the tiniest course alteration, so small you don't hardly notice it. You skip your prayers for a while. You are sick for 2 weeks and you can't get to a meeting. And you feel just as good as if you'd gone to a meeting. And you get the feeling that you don't need them as much as you used to. Or you lose a job or something, and it just breaks our spiritual pattern very slightly. And you just start walking in a slightly different direction, and you start getting a little different attitude. And pretty soon you wonder why suddenly life is so heavy and AA isn't as much fun as it was. And your home group's starting to piss you off. It didn't happen all at once. It just happened with just the smallest little change. And so that's why we try to stay close to each other. In case I don't notice it in myself, maybe my best friend will. And we'll talk to each other about that and ask, what's wrong? Where do you think? And so I think we're all familiar with that. But it also applies to our home group, and it also applies to Alcoholics Anonymous in general. We could compromise out of politeness in our home group, and maybe allow people with other problems in. After all, we ought to be more inclusive. We don't want to be stepping on anybody's toes. We'd like to be polite to everybody. So maybe just in this one case, it's not going to make that much difference. There isn't any of the other fellowships nearby. So why not accommodate and make a small exception? And maybe let's get rid of some prayers that seem to offend. Or maybe let's talk a little more general about philosophy. Or maybe why don't we, and you start seeing that the harmony that was there seems to be shrinking, and there's less unity than there was. And it all starts with the tiniest compromise. And at the time we make the tiniest compromise, it looks like we're being good. It looks like we're being good. And the same thing can apply to our entire fellowship. We could try to make it more open so we can reach more people who might not be coming here because they heard it was too spiritual, or they might not be coming here because whatever. And in the interest of helping them, quote unquote, why don't we just compromise a little bit? It's not going to hurt us that bad. And what I'm trying to share tonight is my own personal belief is it could be incredibly wrong. So what's the simplest thing? And I hate to bring up simple things because alcoholics hate simplicity. They just hate it because there's no way to not do it. There's no excuse for not doing it. Do you follow what I'm saying? We like it to be, well, you know, I have this, and then when I grew up, I had this little, you know, all that. So that's why I can't do a four step. But I would suggest this is the simplest guideline I can think of to keep AA on track. And it's a takeoff on what Chuck used to say, but I'm just simplifying it even further. One problem, one solution. That's it. We have one problem, alcoholism. We have one solution, God. That's the end of the navigation system. You use that navigation system, I think we'll stay on course for the next 1,000 years. That's what I honestly believe. One problem, one solution. Alcoholism, God. Now, we all know it's God as you understand him. We all know that, but that's for beginners. That's, you know, when I'm new, we go, okay, God is what I understand. But if you're like the rest of us, I didn't say God for 5 years because I thought they were talking about the one that I hated and all that. And all of a sudden I went, you're 5 years sober and you're still saying higher power every time you talk. You can say God faster. And I went, you're damn right you can. And besides, nobody's been keeping track of me all these years like I thought they were. And nobody came up and went, you finally caved in, didn't you? In the 12 and 12, in the 12th step, it talks about that. It says that the man who is still having a problem with the spiritual angle and who still calls his home group his higher power will soon come to know and love God and call him by name. And so it's all leading to that. It's been that way since the beginning. It is a process of changing our mind and eventually ending up there. And, of course, the word itself means something different to everybody in this room. But when we use it, we all understand that it is the source of the experience that we had that transformed us. And so I'm just putting a pitch in for keeping it very simple. One problem, one solution, alcoholism and God. That's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. I'm Tom Ivester, an alcoholic, and a member of the Primary Purpose Group, Southern Pines, North Carolina. And one thing, I'm delighted to see a gathering like this. I think this is a real good, healthy thing to just come together, share together, get to know each other, create some intimacy instead of distance. And I think it's a really, really good thing. And I'm glad to be here. Now, I'm not a doomsday guy, but I do have some concerns about Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been here long enough to get a feel for where we are. I have the opportunity to travel a great deal and to go to many, many places and to just get a feel for what AA is. And what I'm reminded of is way back in the Stone Ages, in 1955, when the International Conference was held in St. Louis, something that I think was momentously important occurred. The only problem is that it hasn't been carried out very well. And that was the conference where Bob was gone. Bill, in effect, turned the fellowship over to the membership. The traditions had come into play. They were being implemented. And recognized that the leadership for AA couldn't remain in New York. And it couldn't remain in the hands of just a few people. And so Bill laid out the plan for the General Service Conference, which is the primary decision-making body for our fellowship. And it based it on the home group becoming the driving force in Alcoholics Anonymous. The leadership would come from the fellowship and not from the penthouse. And that was a wonderful kind of a scheme. And the whole idea was, it's where the inverted triangle came from. The whole idea was that each group would have representation, and that representation would carry the wishes of that home group or the concerns of that home group through the GSR to the DCM to the area officers, and then to the General Service Conference. That's a heck of a good plan. The only problem is we've done a pretty poor job of implementing it. And I was concerned about it for a great while, and I wasn't sure if I was just seeing something that was just seemed apparent to me but wasn't necessarily so to a lot of other people. And so I sniffed around about it a good bit. When I retired, I took an area-level service position. They asked me to come in as a corrections chair, and I did that. And I had two driving motives in my accepting that. One was the guys and gals in AA said, we need some leadership in corrections. We're in a lot of trouble. And we think you're the guy to do it. And I said, okay. The second motive was that I had serious doubts about how well we had carried out that plan of Bill's to have the home group be the driving force. So I didn't announce that agenda to anybody, but that was very much on my mind. And so for the next 2 years, I spent a lot of time listening to people. I'd pull together workshops and talk about CPC and talk about the things where we reach out and make things happen in AA. At the end of 2 years, I was absolutely convinced that my fears were very real. What I found in North Carolina, when it came time to represent the group conscience, we had 23% participation in our state. That's 77% are ignoring the process. That was a concern to me. I was doing a workshop in New York trying to heal Yankees or something. I don't know what we were doing, but we were going at it. And one of the participants at the workshop was the chairman of the General Service Conference. And so we took a break. Chairman of the Trustees Committee. And so we took a break, and I said, let me borrow your ear for a minute. And he said, sure. Went over, and I said, I want to tell you my view of something, and then I want you to tell me your view, and I hope to God yours is different than mine. And so I told him what I just told you, that this is what I observed. I said, what I want him to tell me is that when you looked at a broader picture, it changed. And he said, unfortunately, my view is exactly the same as yours. nationally, we had a 23% level of participation. Well, to me, that is cause for concern. When that whole legacy was built on the home group being the driving force, that puts it in pretty precarious position. Added to that, that if you look, my buddy here talks about the pockets of enthusiasm, where you got groups that are showing signs of life. And when you start looking around the country to find genuine, functioning three legacy groups, you better be ready for a long search. Long search. There are areas of this country where there is no pretense of having home groups, where every meeting is just one of those sort of grab your best hold and talk. Concerning to me about where the leadership comes from and where it ought to be coming from. That's a matter of great concern to me. And, what we'll do with it, I don't know. Yeah, I want to just kind of lay it on you so that you don't just leave here with party time. I want you to leave here with a little bit of a heavy heart. And because what's been done is the fellowship has been trusted to us, for God's sakes. And if we don't follow through with it, we're the folks that are dropping the responsibility. And so I have a lot of joy in AA. I have a lot of deep satisfaction. But I'm also one of the people who was supposed to pick up the gauntlet. And we just haven't done it, is what it looks like to me. So I have great, great concern about that. And the other thing that Sandy just mentioned there, that's the thing, and I'll just lay one more little negative on you, and I hope you hope you'll focus on the other one more even more than this one. That whole thing of singleness of purpose, that we are literally losing that. That's a battle, and we're losing it. I was just over in Russia and Ukraine. I understand you're from there. You're not? Didn't you play the guitar? Do you want to? It's the guitar player, the singer. She's from Ukraine, I think. I want her to talk some Ukraine to me. But when I was over there meeting with those folks from Ukraine and Russia, the problem is exactly the same. Exactly the same. I just said sort of only just slightly in jest, what I think we really need is a worldwide group conscience. I guarantee you in this group right here, you've got probably above average members in terms of tenacity in the program and real commitment to it. I bet you that if we did a show of hands, I'm not going to do it, about people who really believe singleness of purpose was important, I doubt if we'd go over half the room. We're losing the battle. I don't think there's any question. I think it's important. That doesn't make it important, but it makes it important to me. I got thinking about that, and maybe I'm looking for a little grassroots support, but I made that kind of half in jest a comment that I thought we needed a worldwide group conscience, and then I heard what I said. I'm not so doggone sure it's not right. And one of the things that I'm going to do just as an individual, I'm going to contact whoever's involved in putting an international together in your city, in here in Atlanta, Georgia. That's the next one, isn't it? Yeah, Atlanta. Yeah, you guys get ready. But what I'm going to do is ask them to take a hard look at putting together a forum, not a group conscience, but a forum, and ask for one person from each country represented to represent that country and speak in behalf of, this level of concern and just see what it is. I don't know. When I first came in here, my vocabulary was basically somebody needs to do something. Then one day it dawned on me, I'm somebody and I need to do something. And so I hope that you share those kinds of concerns and that it's not just a whoopee party. People's lives depend on what we do. And I want to take that seriously and commend you to that as well. All right, thanks.
My name is Clancy Immisland, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm from the Pacific Group in Los Angeles, California. I'm glad to be here. I've enjoyed what the two gentlemen preceding me have said. I agree with what they say, and I felt the same way. I for one, was shocked last year. I was asked to come up and speak at some sort of little annual meeting of the staff of the World Service Office in New York, and they closed the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. I said, "What happened to the Lord's Prayer?" And they said, "We don't say that anymore." And I made some comments that made it unnecessary for me ever to go back there again. And then I noticed last summer, a year ago, they only said the Lord's Prayer once at the International Convention for the first time ever. They had new reasons not to say it, but because it offends some people. Well, making amends offends me. So let's get rid of that. Not really, but I mean, that's the way it goes. And Sandy and I have communicated a little bit. He's certainly led a charge to restore a little bit more of God in this fellowship, and which is, I believe, absolutely critical. And I hope he continues the battle. And I certainly agree with that. And Tom mentioned the fact that the home group is no longer a viable spokesman for AA, and that's certainly true in our community. Most groups don't have a GSR, don't go to it. If they do have one, they don't go do anything about it. The Pacific Group is the largest single AA group in the world. And our delegate has never been to it for the last three delegates. He's representing 1,000 people at that meeting, and he doesn't go there because he would rather go to the smaller meetings. And I get the feeling that we are not communicating what we feel, because we feel much the same way. We have been the largest contributor to the World Service Office for, I don't know, 20 years. And this year they voted not to contribute. They felt that strongly about it. They gave the money to the central office downtown. And it's a sad thing, but little by little it's becoming frazzled at the edges. And I hope that Tom's plan works. Now, what I want to discuss for a moment is something else. It's something to do with what we do. Recently, I was in a different country. You're from a different country, aren't you? I don't know why people don't like me. I try to be nice, God damn it. Anyway, no, I'm just... He's got more time than I have. I have to be respectful. But anyway, someone asked me in a question and answer session, he said, why does AA work? I wish he'd have said, how does it work? I say, read chapter 5. But why does AA work? And I gave him some sort of a shilly-shally answer. And I thought about it later, and I've talked to a number of people. I don't think anybody in the world knows why AA works. It's just absolutely... It makes you almost a little afraid. Maybe it's just some sort of self-hallucination that we're... Oh, we've got a program here. It's really wonderful. Oh. Yeah. And then I thought of something that I knew from years ago that's almost a perfect analogy for the situation. In the 17... A cook just came to that door and looked in here. Somebody walked out on their check. Who was it? Anyway... In the 1700s, one of the more lethal things in the world was smallpox. When smallpox epidemic hit a city, a third of it could be wiped out. They never could understand why. They knew nothing about bacteria or germs or viruses or anything. Just it looked as though God was just punishing them. We used to think, you know, years ago about AIDS, God is just punishing these people. And they didn't know what to do about it. Nobody could do anything about it. I have a book home called Bring Out Your Dead that covers Philadelphia in the 1700s, talking about the wagons during the epidemic going through the streets saying, bring out your dead. You bring out your mother or your baby who just died and throw them on the wagon because you don't know what else to do. And the doctors didn't want to spend much time helping them because then they'd catch it too and die. So it really was a t- terrible situation. In London, there was a young doctor named Edward Jenner, and he was enthusiastic. He wanted to help these poor people. He didn't know why or how he could do it, but he talked to a lot of the people to see it. And he stumbled onto something very strange. There were about 8 young girls surrounded by smallpox who did not get smallpox. He thought, how can this be? So he talked to them, where are you from? Is it maybe, oh, you're from Scotland and you're from Wales and you're from Ireland. It can't be your place of origin. And it isn't your names or your religion. And what do they have in common? Well, one thing they had in common, they all milk cows for a living. But yet there were a number of girls who milk cows for a living dying of smallpox. So how could that be? What was it? And then he stumbled onto one other thing by accident. They all had had a minor disease that milkers often got called cowpox, which made you sick like the flu, but then you got better again. And each of these girls had had the cowpox, and the girls dying from smallpox had not had the cowpox. But how could getting a disease keep you from dying of another disease? That's ridiculous. But he did one of the great tests of all time, experiments. He bought a little boy named Jimmy Phipps, who was 9 years old, and he took him to where the people had cowpox, and he didn't know how to transfer it, but he took a knife and cut a little slash in the kid's arm, and he took his hand and got some blood and pus and rubbed it in it, and the kid got cowpox and got better. Then he took him to where they were dying of smallpox. And this was really the critical part. He cut a slash in his arm. He didn't touch these people. Took a stick and got some pus and blood and rubbed it in the kid's arm. The kid got sick and got better. And for the first time, they discovered how you stop smallpox. You get cowpox. But, you know, how could that be? How could that be? How could you get one disease to keep from getting another disease? But he tried. He announced this. A lot of people... That's ridiculous nonsense. Show us how it works. It doesn't work. We don't know. But they noticed little by little that the people who took the cowpox didn't get smallpox, so it gathered little momentum. It's an interesting thing. The Greek, the Latin word for cow is vaccus. Vaccination means injection of the cow, and still does. But eventually over the years, about 100 years later, they discovered why it worked. They had microscopes, finally. And they saw that the elements of cowpox stopped and destroyed the virus of smallpox. And then they understood it. Everybody was glad. But for 100 years, they had no knowledge. Why? And in many ways, Alcoholics Anonymous is in that same position right now. We have a cowpox that really works, but we don't know why. I hope that maybe 100 years from now, some crazed scientist will leap out of his laboratory and say, I found the reason why AA works. It turns out that a series of strange actions taken under the guidance of a tyrant sets a flood of endorphins to the upper cerebral cortex, making it unnecessary to drink. Oh, doctor, wonderful, wonderful. It won't help us. We'll all be dead. So our activities here really boil down to getting people to take the cowpox for no known reason. Why should I take an inventory? Because I said so. Why don't you say it a little more nicely? Maybe. But the odd thing also about this cowpox thing is that when they got cowpox and got a vaccination, they were saved. But our vaccination of cowpox doesn't work that well. We get a little defense. Our cowpox comes little by little, maybe. Helping somebody is a little vaccination. Maybe going to the meetings that you should go to is a little vaccination. Maybe applying a little honesty in your life gives you a little vaccination. And they would last for a while, but as Sandy said tonight, you don't go to meetings for a couple of weeks, you don't take care of the things, pretty soon you get goofy again. You get on your way to the smallpox. So what we have to do, I think, remind ourselves that this is not, you don't have to do bad things to leave AA. You just have to not do the things that keep you here. People will say, how can that rotten bastard be sober and this nice person got drunk? Because he did the things AA said and they didn't. It's that simple. And if you want an example of that, don't go to a meeting for a couple of weeks, as Sandy says. I've done that. It didn't bother me. I stayed exactly the same. But everybody around me slowly went bad. And that's why I go to meetings today. I don't need them. I do them for you. I do them for my kids and my wife and my employees and so on. Because that's why they talk about alcoholism being a disease of perception. If we don't take care of things, our perception goes bad. And that's what always happens with us. I mean, all you have to guess is nobody in this room can guarantee me how they're going to feel when they wake up tomorrow morning. Crabby or happy or jolly or irritable, who knows? But those are the conditions that we face as human beings. And that's why we can keep doing the things that address our perception. I've talked about this before, but you know, that's why they say don't get too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. They're not bad things, but they change your perception. You'll notice when you're hungry, everybody around you starts to act stupidly. I've noticed that many times. And you just, come on! When you're angry sometimes, it's almost as though God wants you to kill them for their own good. You have to overrule it, but you can think it. When you're lonely, you know they're all having fun somewhere, but they didn't tell you, did they? When you're tired, they literally attack. I live out in the west side of Los Angeles by the ocean, and I take a drive downtown, Highway 10, down to downtown every morning on the freeway. And sometimes I've been somewhere else the night before, maybe to Palm Springs or San Diego or someplace where you get home tired. You don't get enough sleep. You get on the freeway, and you're tired. But I've discovered how not to show it, you know. But they know. I could just see some old lady up in La Cienega saying, see the boy in the big white Merc? He's fatigued. I'm going to cut that son of a bitch off. Yeah. I don't know how they know, but they know. But one of the things AA has taught me is I don't have to chase him past my exit. If I haven't caught him by my exit, good flying, Red Baron, we'll meet again. And when you do catch him, you can't do anything. All you can do is get next to him and give him a ray. About 10 years ago, I came off the Santa Monica Freeway onto the Harbor Freeway, which is kind of heavy traffic. And some little girl cut me off and almost killed me. I skidded and just missed the post. And I made an exception in her case. I went by my exit for about 2 miles and caught her on the Pasadena Freeway and got next to her and gave her a quintuple ray. Then I noticed she was just about 17 years old, had a little blonde hair, age of my granddaughter, one of my granddaughters. And I thought, what have I turned into, an old, tired old fool here, catching this little girl who's probably going to work, working, trying to be a decent person, and here I am giving her the glare. So I smiled, and she went, I thought about her for several days. But that's what all of our vaccinations here are for, to keep from those things from happening. So don't get too tired. Don't get too hungry. Don't get too lonely. Don't get angry. Live at peace. Try to live with some degree of dignity if you can. Not because it's a good thing to do, not because it's a civilized thing to do, but because it keeps your perception a better. And no matter who you are, no matter how long you've been sober, no matter how wonderful you've become, you never rise above human being. And human beings are flawed and fallible. And no matter how wonderful you come, some days are just going to be rotten days. You can tell by 10 o'clock in the morning, this is a bad day. So what you do, you keep your mouth shut all day long and just mutter to yourself, come on, midnight. Come on, midnight. Because it's so easy when you're tired to lash out at people and destroy good relationships, all the things that happen. Because they really follow a lot of people who are decent people and good people. It's also got some very bad people in it. But we try to help them. But the number one thing, as I think, is the reason these three guys are here, we three guys, the three wise men. I was going to dress up like a Oriental king tonight, and I decided not to. I tried to follow a star, but Marie was too hard to follow her. But the reason we're here, and the reason all speakers are here at any convention or anybody that you're talking to, one reason always. We're here to tell you this big fact. Take the damn cowpox. Don't worry about it. Just take the damn cowpox and keep doing it and keep doing it and keep feeling well. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to close with the Lord's Prayer, and before we do, especially for those who are new, most of the people here have been to a lot of conferences, but I would like for us to stand and just honor the people who have come here, not because of what they say, but because for years and years and years they've worked, gotten on planes, transferred three times. Their constant commitment and dedication is what keeps somebody like me from burning out and walking away from this program. And I thank them personally, but would we all just stand and give them a thank for what they do? All right, if you'll let's give them a chance to come down and join us, and we'll say the Lord's Prayer.